Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Looking forward to a great hour ahead. So glad to have you tuned in today. Here on Connecting Faith, we look for ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life, that we can maybe see the world through a biblical worldview lens. And today we're going to talk about an outreach opportunity that maybe you hadn't really thought of before, just maybe a different way of sharing the gospel and being effective and strategic in that. By the way, speaking of effective and strategic, before we go any further, I do want to say thanks once again for those that responded during our fall share this past week in such an overflowing way. Your generosity is so appreciated. And we're thankful for the way that you've gotten involved. And you can always find out more about that on our website at myfaithradio.com. Let's get into today's conversation, because we're going to learn a little bit about tent making and business for transformation and several other words and maybe acronyms that you may or may not be familiar with. Patrick Lai is my guest today. Patrick has a degree in business marketing and a master's of divinity degree, and he has lived in the in Southeast Asia for a number of years, working in the 1040 window. He's served for 4 years as regular missionaries, 19 years as tent makers. And he's written several books, including Tent Making, The Life and Work of Business as Missions. And he's in the area. There's a conference of like-minded individuals that get together periodically just to sort of share ideas and to find out about how business can be a venue or an avenue to reach out with the gospel. So, Patrick, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Neil. It's good to be here.
Maybe we need to just start out with a few definitions. BAM, business as missions.
Sure. Business as mission is kind of the term that was coined by the Lausanne Congress. Actually, up until 2004, tent making was the word, which is why my first book was titled Tent Making. And it was published in 2005, just months after Lausanne changed the term. But BAM is the word, business's mission, that refers to basically anything that has to do with business and ministry. So you're doing marketplace ministry here in the United States, that's BAM. You're doing Christian Businessmen's Association here in the United States, or anywhere, that's BAM. Social enterprise business, environmental enterprise business that has an emphasis on the gospel is BAM. Microenterprise development can be BAM. So BAM is the big overarching word. What we do is business for transformation. And we coined that word about 10 years ago simply to differentiate ourselves as a subset of BAM, a niche of BAM, like microenterprise development or social enterprise type of businesses, and that our focus is the 1040 window, doing for-profit businesses with an emphasis on evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. So all of the people in the network, there's over 700 of us now, are doing business. About half own small or medium-sized businesses, and about half are employees of national or international companies. But all are being held accountable for creating jobs, being profitable, and having an impact on lives or the community in Jesus' name.
So there's maybe that aspect, too. We may just touch on that, that it's about impacting a community by providing jobs and resources, right? I mean, you're impacting a standard of living for the communities you're in.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, yes. And we've seen that in several cities. It's really fun to come in, especially I was recently in a country in Asia where a couple of government officials, I was able to talk with them, and they were telling me how two of the businesses in the network were literally changing the way business was being done in the capital city because their standards were so much higher, their quality was so much better, the people selling, buying, trading with them realized, hey, if they said they'd pay on Friday, they paid on Friday. and it was impacting the community to the point that these government officials said that they had discussed these businesses, and actually they've had the owners of both of these businesses present to Parliament, you know, why they're different and how they operate, and obviously that creates opportunities to talk about Jesus.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, the 1040 window, maybe some people not really aware of that, but that also is kind of a, I guess, a distinctive area in terms of latitude and longitude that really represent essentially fairly closed countries to the gospel, right? So you're not just in any countries where, you know, Christianity is readily accepted, right?
That's correct. 85% of our businesses are in Muslim countries, with a smattering in Hindu areas, mostly in India. And then we maybe got 15 to 20 in Southeast Asia, Burma, Laos, Vietnam, Buddhist areas.
You've been a tent maker or in the business for transformation for a number of years, but also been a traditional missionary. I'd be interested in your kind of perspective, maybe pluses, minuses of both, or differences.
Sure. I mean, actually being a traditional missionary is a lot more comfortable and in a sense easier, in the sense that when we're running businesses, we do everything from a traditional ministry viewpoint that a missionary does, but we also have a business to run and employees to be accountable to, as far as they're depending upon us for their jobs and the livelihood of their families. But from an impact on the community side, one of the reasons I believe the Lord led my wife and myself to begin starting businesses was when we would share with Muslims, we would talk to them about grace, we'd talk to them about forgiveness, we'd talk to them about a personal relationship with God, we'd talk with them about love. And at the time, I thought people were understanding, but they were just hardened and, you know, just shunning the gospel. But it wasn't until the Lord led us into doing business and we started working with people. And, of course, as we're working, we extend grace to an employee who makes a mistake. We extend love to, you know, employees if their family members are sick or they need help. We help them out. We extend forgiveness to employees who intentionally cheat us or lie to us intentionally, or clients who do the same. And, of course, they see how we involve God, Jesus, in our daily activities, how we stop and pray over things, how we pray for them and situations in the business on a daily basis. They see how we bring God naturally into our conversations. And as Muslims, those are good things. There's nothing wrong from their standpoint, but they're not used to it. It's just not the way they or most people do business. And so when they begin to see grace, see forgiveness, see a relationship with God, see love, all of a sudden lights would begin to click on, and they begin to say, oh, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I get it. And I begin to realize that when I was in a more traditional missionary role, I was saying things, but they didn't have any boxes for it. It's not in the Quran. It's not in their way of life. And so I was speaking words that meant nothing to them. It'd be kind of like if we started talking rocket science or whatever, you know, we'd be lost, right? Yeah. And that's where they were at. And so we're beginning to see the importance of modeling the gospel has to go even before the verbal proclamation. And if you study the gospels, you'll find that this is actually what Jesus did too. He almost always heals somebody, feeds people, does some miraculous thing to show, hey, I'm different. I'm worthy of respect. I'm worthy of being listened to. And then he talks about the kingdom of God. And I know in my own experience, especially when I was in seminary, you know, we were taught to go out and preach, 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 talk, talk, talk. And so that's what we did. And when we were working with Chinese, it worked. And obviously it's worked in South America. It's worked in Sub-Saharan Africa. It's worked in a lot of places. But it's not working in the Muslim world. And so now the Lord is leading now hundreds of people to move into doing for-profit businesses to model the gospel so that they see that. And, of course, governments welcome us, where in the past I was always afraid, is the government going to find out who I am, what I'm doing? Now Everybody knows I'm a Christian. Everybody knows I love Jesus. Everybody knows I'm even a little fanatical about it from their viewpoint. But because we're creating jobs, we're adding value to the community, the few times where we've had persecution from more fundamentalist people, the government steps in and says, whoa, 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 not so fast. Look, they're doing all these good things for all these people. It's okay. It's okay. So there's a big difference.
Patrick Lai is my guest today. Patrick is serving in Asia. He has been involved in business for transformation for a number of years. It's a subset of business as mission. Patrick's written several books, including Tent Making, The Life and Work of Business as Mission, which might be a good resource for you, and give you a website that you can go on to find out a little bit more about the work of business for transformation. It's nexusb4t.com, nexusb4t.com. And we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment with Patrick as we learn a little bit more about how this really works as we talk about using work and in job creation as a venue, as an opportunity to share the love of Christ, to demonstrate, to model Christian love and compassion and share the gospel. More on that coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Connect with Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and my guest today is Patrick Lai. Patrick has lived in the 1040 window for a couple of decades, where he serves as we might have called it a tent maker years ago, but his focus is business development. And it's a subset of something called BAM, Business as Missions, Business for Transformation. In fact, they use the acronym B, the number 4T, B4T. And you can find out on their website, nexusb4t.com, a little bit more about that. He's also written a book called Tent Making, The Life and Work of Business as Mission. I'm curious to know, you have started several businesses. Some have failed. What was the first one? And then maybe just talk about why some worked and why some didn't.
Sure. The very first business we started was actually a kindergarten.
Okay.
We went into a community, a kind of rural community outside of a city, and we went to the government leaders and we said, we want to do something to help your community. What can we do? And they gave us several problems that they were concerned about, but one of them was the kids in the city got placed in the better schools because they would take a test when they were five, and depending upon how they tested, then they got placed in schools. And, of course, their kids basically had no preschool, no kindergarten, nothing. So they always scored terrible, and they always wound up in the worst schools. So when they got to 6th to 8th grade, often dropped out and wound up being fishermen and farmers, which is nothing wrong with that, but nobody was getting better jobs. And, of course, jobs are important to people. So they said, what can we do? And we said, well, we can start a kindergarten. Would that be a good idea? And so our very first business was a kindergarten, and today it's still there. We have 4 kindergartens now in the area for students. And through that, we have seen at least 8 complete families come to the Lord, and about 80 people total have been baptized. Some of those are kids who've grown up. Some of those are connections through teachers and others. But there's now a community of about 40 believers. I'm sorry, 80 believers through those 4 kindergartens.
So, do you? Is it a matter of hiring locals, or do you sort of bring in others that are already believers, and they become the teachers or the administrators of those things?
In most of our businesses, there's been an expat involved in the startup and the initial management, but many of our businesses, not all, have been passed over to nationals after a period of time. You asked about the first business. That's a nice one. If you asked about the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth businesses, those all have failed and are no longer in operation. Four of those five businesses failed because I really blame myself. All right, I didn't adequately fund the business, or I didn't adequately train the locals when they took over the business to run the business. And looking back, I mean, well, you learn a lot through failure. And so our success rate has been much better with the last seven businesses. But the first seven, basically six out of the seven failed. Just the first one happened to be a home run. But the others did not do as well.
You know, as a follower of Christ, I guess, you know, you say missionary. I mean, you're being strategic in terms of you're there to share the gospel and try and reach a Muslim for Christ and others. So, you know, that failure side of it somehow feels like, well, didn't God call me to do this? So why am I experiencing this? Did you go through some of that?
A little bit, but not too much, actually. Yeah. I think because you realize in doing business that there is a lot of stresses, a lot of problems. And when you look at traditional church planting, there's a lot of people who go out to plant churches and never plant a church. So you struggle with it, for a few days, maybe a few weeks. But it wasn't something that, you know, affected us because we kept at it. And in those failures, to clarify, five of the businesses failed because they weren't making money. But one of the businesses was very profitable. It made money from basically the first week and did well the first year. But one of the conditions for the businesses is that they're impacting the community in Jesus' name. And at the end of the year, I did a review of that business and found the employees who all had been trained in evangelism, all were four main employees were believers. They'd done nothing to impact the community. They just had nice jobs, and the profits from that business were going to the second church that we planted in the area. It was a great scenario, but nothing was happening through the business. So I reminded them of our goals and objectives, gave them a little more training, and gave them another 6 months. At the end of 6 months, still nothing. Did the same thing again at the end of the next 6 months, still nothing. So I closed the business. Kind of the dirty dozen principle, you know, you've got one because since then we've seen that whenever a business gets started and they know I'm coming, there's just this buzz about, hey, have you shared your faith with somebody? who be sure the customers know we walk with Jesus, you know, those kinds of things get emphasized. But it's not just a for-profit bottom line. There's also a spiritual bottom line. So in everything we do, we're holding one another accountable, and this is throughout the whole network, to those two bottom lines. Now, you'll also hear in BAM, especially, of two more bottom lines, the social impact bottom line and the environmental impact bottom line, which are both good bottom lines. Yet in B4T, our emphasis is on the first two. We do some accountability with the other two, but not as important as the first two.
Is it easier to train a business person to be an evangelist tent maker or an evangelist to be a businessman?
That's a pretty easy one, actually. It's much easier to train a business person who loves Jesus to do evangelism, discipleship, and church planting than it is to take somebody, especially out of a seminary background situation, and train them to do business. We've tried both on numerous occasions. There's a few people from seminary background who've done well. I have a seminary degree as well. But I think it's very hard to lay aside all that knowledge. You get all that training theologically, and you feel you need to use it. And so people tend to gravitate toward a more traditional church type of ministry or a Bible college teaching type of ministry than a business type of ministry. There aren't a lot of evangelists, and I would say very, very few entrepreneurs that go to seminary. Bible college, maybe, but there are a number of Bible colleges now that are starting very good business programs, and some of them are starting to link with our network to do internships, short terms, and apprenticeships, 2 to 3 year programs working in our businesses, and they're talking about, no school is doing it yet, giving credit to some of these students for the work that they're doing in those programs. So it's beginning to change. But from a seminary standpoint, no, I don't see a lot of successful individuals. It's actually nowadays, as we talk about training, important to rethink how we train people. I was just at a conference in Louisville at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary last week with 25 theologians from about 15 to 20 different Bible colleges and seminaries and explaining to them, these are some of the things we have to look at as we train people, because the things we've emphasized in the past are very good if you're going to work in South America or Sub-Saharan Africa where there are churches. But if we're focused on reaching those places where there are no churches, we need to emphasize different aspects of training, including giving them skills that the local people want and will welcome. Because if you come with no skills, you're not welcome. And even the NGO model, the non-government organization model where people come in and provide charity and services and helps, Christian NGOs are getting shut down in many countries like Morocco and Sudan and Uzbekistan. And as that number continues to increase, business is going to be the primary way of getting into these places and both modeling and speaking the gospel to people.
Now, you said that, you know, kind of the old model was that we think we should teach and speak. And obviously, you know, the gospel really isn't fully communicated until it's shared. But and you are involved in discipleship and church planting. But, you know, talk about how what does that actually look like? So in a business, you move into a community, you know, how do you get to that point, I guess?
Well, we talk about four steps, major steps in the process. You need to get the language first and foremost, not just to share the gospel. We're actually finding in our research that those who are fluent in the local language are also much more likely to succeed in business. So you need the language for business just as much as you need it for doing discipleship with locals. Then the second step, usually people will take 1 to 2 years to learn the language, and often during that time they need to be fully supported because obviously there's no income from a job. And then they either move into working for an international company or a local company, in which case they need very little financial support, or if they start their own business, then we work with them to write a business plan. We have many coaches, and that's a part of why we have these conferences in the United States every year, is to invite business people to come, hear what we're doing, and see, hey, would you like to use your skills? I mean, we've got farmers in our network. We've got all kinds of businesses in our network. You'd be surprised at how many different types of people we need help from. But the point being is that second step then is getting the business started. So helping them write a business plan, research the area, the resources, how to introduce yourself to government officials, because having them on board is very important. And then raising the capital to get the business launched, and then launching the business. Usually in launching the business, it is a lot of work. I mean, we just cannot overemphasize. 60 hours a week is a short week, okay? But it's during that time that people are modeling the gospel. You're usually way too busy to spend a lot of time on discipleship, evangelistic type of things, but what we didn't realize in that period of time, they're watching us. And after 2 to 3 years, in most cases, sometimes it's a little longer, sometimes it's a little faster, as you begin to generate profit, you begin to hire more people. And now your hours can be cut down to 30, 35, wherever you want them to be. The business begins to work as a business. And that's when we enter what we call the integration step.
I'm going to interrupt right there because we've got a hard break coming up here we need to take care of, but we're going to hear more. What does that integration step look like? What does it mean to be involved in business for transformation? Patrick Lai is leading the way on that. We're going to hear more in this fascinating conversation here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned. Listening to Connecting Faith, I'm Neil Stavem, and we've connected today with Patrick Lai as we talk about how business can be used strategically to share the gospel, particularly in countries where typical missionary opportunities are not there, and where Patrick and many of the teams that are part of Business for Transformation, B4T, are working are 85% Muslim, as he mentioned. And they're setting up businesses, and they're improving the community, and they're sharing the gospel. And we're finding out how that's done. You've talked about just before the break, Patrick, about four major steps, learning the language and developing a business. And we just got into the last step here before the break, so pick it up from there.
Sure.
So.
The first step was language learning. The second step was getting your business started. Each of those takes 2 to 3 years. And then the third step, the integration step, is where the business is successful and you're starting to see money come into the business. And this last step is then what we call the fruitful, productive step, in that in the integration step, people have been watching you. Now you're able to share more verbally. Your language is good. People understand your purposes, and they begin to respond to the gospel. And so you begin to see employees literally coming to you and asking about your faith, asking for Bibles. It's not unusual. The first 2 or 3 times you extend grace, forgiveness, that they kind of think, well, you just don't understand the language and culture.
Yeah.
And somewhere between the 3rd and the 6th or 7th time, they think, well, maybe you're just stupid.
Yes.
But after 10, 15, 20 times, they begin to connect the dots and they realize it's because of Jesus. Because you're not hiding your relationship with God. Yeah. You're just not preaching proactively. You're modeling proactively. But it's at that point that they start to come to us and say, hey, I don't understand. Can you tell me more? And, you know, from a sales perspective, if I have a choice between, okay, I'm going to go out and knock on doors and try to convince people to buy my product, or I'm going to sit at my desk and they line up at the door, which model are you going to choose? But you see, what I've been trained in seminary was to go knock on doors and try to get my foot in the door and convince them to buy the product, Jesus. Where the model that we've developed, yes, there's a lot of upfront work, those first 3 steps, 6 to 10 years. But once you get to that point, literally in 100% of our businesses, employees and clients are coming and asking, tell me more about this Jesus.
You know, you said that, you know, after the first few times, people think, well, maybe they just don't know or they're just not very bright. I mean, the goal is to make a profit, right? So, I mean,
yes.
That doesn't mean you just get taken advantage of all the time, right?
Of course not. Of course not. I mean, yes, you have to fire people. You have to deal with corrupt officials, all of these things. But the grace that we extend and the way we invite God into things is so important. For example, the first office manager we hired, we gave her the English name Sue. And everyone that we hire in the final interview, for those in higher positions like a manager, it's 3 interviews, we explain in the final interview that we run our business according to the principles of the Bible. And if that's a problem, you don't want to work for us. In my own business, I have Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims working for me. I've never had anyone turn down a job because we tell them we're going to operate our business according to the Gospels. And so Sue started working for us before we opened the doors. You know, we're still ready to launch. And I asked her to put together a marketing plan for the community. And so a day or two after we opened our door, she comes to my office with a folder and says, you know, boss, here's the marketing plan. Tell me what, you know, you want to do. And I said to her, well, I'll pray about it, and then I'll tell you what to do. And she kind of froze right there in the aisle, looked at me like, what did you just say? But, you know, I'm the boss, so, you know, she doesn't say anything. But I trained myself that when any person in the office asked me for major decisions, you know, not can I go to break or something like that, but major decisions, I would respond to them and say, let me pray about it, and then I'll get back to you. Well, it became a joke in the office after a couple weeks. You know, they'd say, hey, boss, we got something for you to pray about. You know, and they'd laugh, and they thought it was funny. But, you know, as they began to see, we had some very hard times in that business the first 3-4 years. We really didn't start making money until the 5th year. And they saw how God worked miracle after miracle after miracle. And these were miracles. These weren't things that we were able to work and manipulate. God just brought along a client out of the blue, big client, paid their bill on time, and we meet payroll. Those kinds of things happening. And as they begin to see time after time these things happening, and they're seeing me modeling the gospel, it took about 7 years, but they begin to come and ask the questions. And Sue now and her husband and her children are all baptized believers.
Do people sort of back home, back in the States, go, well, you know, is it deceptive? I mean, you're coming in, you're, you know, under the pretense of, you know, business, but you're really believers. So I don't know, do you run into that at all?
Well, you see, there are a lot of people overseas who do what we call platforms, all right? Mm. They don't have a real business. Well, they have registered a business, and they have a business identity, but they're not doing real business. Mm. We're doing real business. We're doing exactly what we tell people we're going to do. We're going to start a business, and we're going to do that with Jesus because we're Christians. When the government authorities have come in and questioned our Muslim employees, are, you know, is Patrick proselytizing you? You know, the very first time they said yes, and I thought, oh, no, I'm in big trouble. But they immediately said, here's how much we get paid. Here's the benefits we get, because most small businesses overseas don't give any benefits. And then they say, working for Patrick is like working for family. Don't shut the business down just because they're practicing their faith. And the authorities would always, oh, okay, and left us alone. And the last, boy, it's been many years now, probably 10, 12 years, we've been doing business with the government. All right, providing services and work for them. So we're not hiding anything. In fact, we emphasize in the network transparency. You do not hide anything about you. We're not part of a mission organization, so we're not missionaries in that sense. So most of us have been commissioned by our home church. But I know, like my home church, when somebody leaves the church to move to Memphis or to Minneapolis, in this case, we will take them up front and pray for them and send them out. And that's what I think we should all be doing wherever we work.
So does that sort of changes the model, I guess, in terms of support raising, right? I mean,
yes.
you don't have to come home every 4 years and spend a year on the road trying to convince people to give you some money.
Absolutely, yes. And again, starting out with language, you do need support for that. And so what invariably happens is we ask people to make a 2-year commitment to support us, and after those 2 years, 25% usually just drop off, but 75% don't. And you do often need help that first year or three with the business, because most businesses don't start generating income for 2 to 3 years. And so you immediately start taking that 10 to 25% of your salary that you're lacking, but you're still getting that 75%. But invariably, over time, it begins to tail off, until you have a handful of people supporting you. Now, we do recommend, I do, some people don't agree with me on this point, but I recommend that you always get some support from at least one church, your home church. And that being because we've seen in the past where people had no support from churches, they had an emergency where they had to go home, they needed help, but they'd been overseas 3 and 4 years, and nobody in their church knew them. You know, how churches change, pastors have changed, missions committees had changed. And so there was nobody to help. And what we're finding, even if the church just supports you like $100 a month, they're tracking with you.
Yeah.
They know who you are. So if there is that emergency, there's still that relationship.
Are there kinds of businesses that are maybe more effective or strategic, or that, you know, as within your network, you said, you know, that we have all sorts of needs from, you know, from farmers to engineers to whatever, but
right.
are there some venues that seem to provide the better, or is it based on location, or?
What we've seen MBAs go out and fail, and somebody with a YWAM training type of background do a similar kind of business and succeed. And so the lessons that we're seeing, it's really not the kind of business. We've, you know, again, seen different models succeed and fail in the same countries. What's the difference I've become convinced of, it's the individual. Are they willing to persevere? Are they willing to put in 80 hours a week that's often needed? So it's the individual. It's the old saying, you bet on the jockey, not on the horse.
We're talking to Patrick Lai today. Patrick and his family lived and worked in a 1040 window for several decades. Patrick has a business marketing degree. He also has a MDiv from Trinity Seminary. He's written several books, including Tent Making, The Life and Work of Business as Missions. And he is part of a subset of BAM, Business as Mission, called Business for Transformation, B4T. In fact, they have a website called NexusB4T.com, where you can find out a little bit more about them. He's in the area for a conference, and they do some of these networking conferences around the country, around the world, actually, from time to time. Just a growing network of men and women who are committed to finding ways that they can impact the community and see lives changed for Christ using business as the platform. We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and we're talking today with Patrick Lye. Patrick has several degrees, and he has started several businesses. Some of them have succeeded. He is part of a network of men and women that are using business strategically, particularly in countries that are often closed to traditional missionaries. They call it B4T, Business for Transformation, and you can find out more at nexusb4t.com. Patrick, you talk about men and women. I guess I was going to ask you, is this something that really is in the countries that you're working in? Is this really about men, or is there a role for women to play in this?
Oh, there's definitely a role for women. We have a handful, but a growing number of businesses that are being run by women. In fact, I just had an email this morning from a woman in the Middle East who I'm going to be doing some consulting with at the end of this month about her starting a business there. So there's opportunities for women to be involved. Although working in Muslim countries, you have to be sensitive to the cultural issues there. I know one woman operating a business also in the Middle East has hired a local believer to be kind of her right-hand guy to deal with government officials because she found out that they just would not respect her, listen to her. And made it very difficult for her. And so she's been there literally 20 years, and she's had this guy working for her for pretty much the whole time now. And that's been a key to her dealing with the government officials. But in dealing in business, business is business. And I don't think the women have been disadvantaged in that. There's been several businesses women have started that were designed specifically for women. There's some women's gymnasiums, hair salons, beautician type of training schools that women have set up, in addition to women running coffee shops, bakeries, language schools, guest houses. So we have women involved in all of those. And some of those have been started by women who are married, and their husbands are either working in another business or teaching in a university, and the women have started these businesses, or the husband is working for the woman. The woman is the entrepreneur, and the husband is more involved in the management of the business.
So do a little recruiting for us today. I'm thinking, you know, is somebody's listening, and maybe they work at a company that has international outreach. That mm-hmm. Should they consider, I could go work in Dubai or something for a while, or, someone who's a university student saying, I've been pursuing business and I don't think I just want to, get out there and make lots of money. That's not my heartbeat. So, or someone that's maybe, my age and close to retirement. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, I've done my career. Is there something else I can do? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to prepare and what steps to take?
Well, all of those things are options. I'd say the majority of the people who've gotten involved in coaching, working with us, are over 50, and they've seen, wow, I've had success with this job. I don't want to go overseas and build a building or do something that's not of my character and experience, but I want to utilize the experiences God has given me in life. And so we're creating opportunities for these women and these men to take their work experiences and multiply them overseas. Again, I had an email this morning from a guy in North Carolina who came to this same conference that was held in North Carolina last year, and just last week went and visited one of the businesses in the Middle East, and he's writing back and saying, hey, I'm selling everything. Me and my wife, we're going to be moving out there for at least 3 years to help this guy with his business. And those are exciting stories to see. We have another guy who came to the same conference in 2010 when it was in Denver, Colorado. He owned a small, medium business. I think he had like 30 employees, and he was looking to produce his product overseas at a cheaper place, was looking at, a standard open country. We said, look, why not a 1040 window country? And he's like, never thought of that. And so he explored two countries in particular, found one was very suitable for business, hired a young man who had been trained in B4T and had an MBA. And that guy has been running that factory for 5 or 6 years now. And through that factory, they've started an orphanage. They have 30 young children now in this orphanage, completely funded by the factory. And they've started a I don't know exact number. I'm going to say three, maybe six Bible studies. But anyway, they've seen people both in the factory and in the community coming to Christ through the factory. And it's because a guy, he still lives in Colorado, but he now has a real heart for that country. He goes out there 3 or 4 times a year and works with his manager, and together they're making an impact.
Is it your responsibility as a business owner or developing this company that you will become a church planter, and so that you become sort of the pastor?
No, not at all. In fact, in his case, they've actually hired a local pastor to be what they call the company chaplain. And the company chaplain has the freedom to come in and minister to people in the workplace. And so that's one model that is successful. Now, there are places, yes, where the business owner has become the pastor of a small group of believers. But in most cases, when the group gets beyond 10, 15, it's basically impossible to shepherd a church and run a business. And usually at that point, then we help them recruit somebody, or they find somebody locally who can either manage the business or shepherd the group of believers, depending upon how God leads them.
Yeah. And I would assume that if there are local believers there already in local churches, that, you know, someone actually coming in and help building up the community in terms of providing jobs is generally welcome.
Oh, yes, so. Very much so. When we come in and create jobs, we're doing something that, again, I didn't recognize as a traditional missionary, and that is creating dignity. You know, when you meet somebody, you ask them, what's your name? The second question is, what do you do? Who we are, our identity, is very much wrapped up in our job. And so when people don't have jobs, of course, they have no hope. They have no sense of worth. They feel devalued. If you've been unemployed, you know how awful that feels. And so when we come in and create jobs, those people become very loyal to us. You know, when, again, fundamentalists say get them out, it's our employees who come to our defense because they appreciate the way we do work. They appreciate our effort to improve the community, not just to make money. They see how we're giving back to the community. And so they like that. They want us there. And, of course, the government officials love us because we pay taxes. The one business I referred to earlier in this country that one of the owners, well, both the owners have talked to the government. One of the government officials said to me, we know this business because it's the only one who pays all of its taxes in the whole country. Because people are always looking to cheat, and this business is looking to, nope, I want to fulfill my obligations as a local business. And so these kinds of things definitely earn respect, create dignity, bring hope. And when you do that, people say, why are you doing this? Oh, well, let me tell you. You know, many times I'll say to Muslims, you know, actually, I don't really want to be here. I'd much rather be back in the United States. Probably have a better standard of living than I'd have here. But I'm here because of Jesus. And I literally will say to them, when I was 19 years old, I asked the Lord, what does he want me to do with my life? And he said to move to Southeast Asia and be a blessing to the people. And, of course, that raises several questions in their mind. What do you mean he told you? Well, here's how God talks to us. It's like, really? You know, he can do that? That gets one thing. The second thing is the relationship. How can you have a relationship with God? All of these things create opportunities. But you see, I don't have to push the opportunities. I just need to model it, and then they come to me with the why, what, how type of questions. And even though it's illegal to proselytize where I live, I'm not ever accused of proselytizing because I'm not. I'm just answering questions. Proselytizing, obviously, is when you knock on a door and try to present or persuade somebody. I'm not persuading. I'm just answering questions. And so with myself, and I know with others in the network, when we've been accused and we've been explaining, well, Muhammad just asked me why, and I answered the question. And Muhammad, of course, yeah, that's right. Well, we don't get in trouble. There's no law against loving people in any Muslim country.
Patrick Lai is my guest today. We're talking about being strategic in business, business for transformation. And as he's been telling, transformation is taking place in these countries traditionally closed to mission outreach. I'm interested, Patrick, how do you guard against this maybe becoming, well, we're from North America and we're here to help you approach?
Oh, yeah, that's a very common problem, in, I think, in all areas of life and work and charity when we're working cross-culturally. I think one of the most important things is very quickly to ensure we're empowering the locals, not taking control of situations. For example, one of the things we did in our business, once we started making money, I went to the employees and said, look, we want to bless the community. We want to give to local charities. What do you recommend? Now, immediately they said the mosque. And I'm like, okay, no, we're not going to give to the mosque, and we're not going to give to churches. We're not going to give to any religious organization. Well, then they went and discussed it as a staff, and they had one of them had a nephew who was autistic and said, can we give to the Autistic Association? Yeah, that'd be great. Another one had a close friend, next door neighbor, literally, whose daughter was Down syndrome. Can we give it to the Down syndrome? Oh, yeah, we can do that. And so when we built those relationships, I took a couple of our managers with us. But once the relationship was built, I don't go anymore. I write the check. But they take the check. They get their picture taken. It's something they own. And I've heard through the grapevine, you know, how our employees love the fact that we're helping people who would not normally be helped. And again, even those two organizations in our city, they never had a business come to them and say, can we help? All of their fundraising had been through religious organizations or even overseas organizations, but to have a business. And since we've started doing that now, there's been other businesses because families involved hear about our business. Well, I work for this business. They talk to their boss, and their boss contacts us. How does this work? Well, we want to add value to the community, don't you? Yeah. And so it begins to spread. And obviously that's a positive thing. And so literally on the south side of our city, I can go most places, and people, when they find out who I am, oh, welcome, seat of honor. We want you to be here, because they know the impact we're having.
We got just about 2 minutes left. What's the maybe the biggest obstacles, the biggest challenges? How can we be praying or supporting it, making a real difference in what you're doing?
Well, the biggest obstacle is why we're here in Minneapolis this week. I mean, if people want to come to the Open B4T Expo, we need people who are willing to invest, not give. Okay, this is an investment where you'll get back your money with interest if the business succeeds. There's always that if. And we need men and women who will come alongside as coaches, be willing to share their expertise with young people who are going out, getting started with tools like Skype and Viber and WhatsApp. We can talk to people daily if needed to encourage them, and as they face business questions or even family questions, and say, you know, they need somebody to talk to. And we have a network of mentors and coaches that is established, and we are always looking for more people to get involved in those two areas of investing in businesses and coming alongside just to talk to young people who need somebody to talk to.
Did you ever think back, you know, when you were 19 to now that this is what you'd be doing?
Never. Absolutely never. No.
And probably fairly rewarding?
Oh, we love what we do. It's just so much fun to go into a Muslim area, help somebody get started, come back a year or 3 years later and see a small group of believers, come back 7-10 years later and see an actual, not building, but a group of 40 people meeting in a home, a church. That's so exciting. We're just so blessed that the Lord's allowed us to be a part of that.
Well, let me give you the website. It's nexusb4t.com, nexusb4t.com. It's a network of like-minded friends that want to see the gospel shared using business. And Patrick Lai offering some great insight with us today. Patrick, so good to have you in studio. Thanks so much for what you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. And again, you can drop us a note here if you want to find out a little bit more, and we'll get you connected with Patrick and the network there as well. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show, you can always catch it online. The podcast available at myfaithradio.com.